Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron. This is Call Me The Breeze by Peter Scandera and Dave Mabey. And it's New Zealand Music Month. It's Raglan Music Month here on The Morning Show. And Dave is right now in the studio. Welcome to the studio, Dave.
Thanks, Aaron. Nice to be here on a...
dodgy morning?
Oh, somewhat sort of raining morning, but outside what's going on? There's trucks and sewage.
Sewage? No, there's not sewage.
Oh.
let's not start a rumour. That wouldn't be good. Hey, most people know, most listeners will know that Dave's been involved in music locally and around the place for a long time.
Yeah.
And we wanted to go back to the beginning of the long time.
Okay.
And we're talking just off the air. Where are we going back to?
My suggestion is we started at 1973. And the reason there,
I was two.
Okay. 1973, I was in Wellington, and I was playing there and trying to break into the Wellington scene. And I used to go down to a pub down there that on a, I think it was a Tuesday, Wednesday night, and it was absolutely packed out. And it was Midge Marston and the Country Flyers. And the Country Flyers were exactly what the name implies. It's a country-based band. Yeah. So we would do Charlie Daniels band music. We would do Roy Cooter.
So did you join the band?
I ended up joining the band for about 3 months. One of the original guitarists, there were two guitarists, Martin Hope and, oh, I can't remember the others, Kevin Watson, I think. Anyhow, his, long story short, he had to leave playing music. And as I was an avid supporter, and I'd sort of introduced myself to Mitch, he said, oh, you want to have a go? Anyhow, so that ended up me playing in there for about 3 months. And we used to get $10 minus tax each a night.
For 73, was that much money?
Well, it seemed like a lot at the time because, you know, I was earning it from music, which was fantastic.
Right, but actually, but being paid to play in a pub was quite rare then, you were saying?
Very rare. It was in a place called the Royal Tiger. It was up around the back of, heading towards the Basin Reserve, sort of from Cuba Street in a direction towards the Basin Reserve. I think that's roughly right. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't even
probably
know
doesn't exist.
No, it probably doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I just loved the music, and I just loved everything about working with Midge. You know, he would say, you know, do some songs, sing some songs, and he never put any limitations. He never put any, you know, any issues in the way, and that began my professional and friendship basis for working with Midge. Fast forward to 1981, I came to Raglan in 81 and Midge came in about 82, 83. However, that initial playing in a pub and getting paid for it, it sort of reappeared again about 1975, and I was touring mainly the South Island with a band, buddies from around the Waikato. It was a band called Climax Red Herring. So we wanted to play in the pubs. Long story short, I ended up in some meetings in Auckland with directly negotiating with the likes of DB Breweries, Lion Breweries, and then later what they called the what became Steinlager. Yeah. I can't remember the brewery chain. Anyhow, so there was the two main ones, and they had a lot of pubs. If you think of some of the famous ones like the DB Sandown in Gisborne, the DB Aranui in Christchurch. So by 1975, there were bands playing in pubs, and it was on the cusp of being us renegotiating so that we could do a door deal. So I was involved in those direct negotiations,
right,
whereby the pubs said, look, you know, obviously you're bringing the punters. And we said, look, we'll take a punt. We will take a door. We will put a cover charge on the door. And that allowed, a little bit later, the likes of Midge, etc., for us to tour endlessly and make a, you know, a serious living from it.
Right. So did they need their arms twisting on that? Were they like, oh, that might stop people coming in and buying our beer? Or did they understand that the band was the draw card?
The entertainment managers that we were dealing with, and one guy in particular, his name was Ernie Garnier, and a really neat guy. He only passed away maybe 5-10 years ago. And they were younger than the people who owned the breweries and recognised that we were bringing in these punters. So they were all for it. They had to, you know, prove the argument to their boards or whoever the shareholders were. Anyhow, it worked.
Yeah.
And it worked pretty much, right up to the, what was that? One of those music crazes, you know. That
changed everything.
Changed everything, yeah. Disco music. Who said that?
Disco. Oh, we don't like this. Let's leave disco out of it.
I mean, for a form of entertainment, disco's great. Same as, you know, line dancing and punk music. I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying that it's a different element than from what we were used to playing, which was a lot of covers but also a lot of originals. And this is more probably where we need to go next.
So did that kind of start generating original New Zealand music, the fact that bands had the opportunity to tour music and play it to people?
Yeah, pretty much, because around about that time also, NZBC, or what became
TVNZ,
TVNZ and the music component part of it, they then, and behind the scenes, there were people like Andy Anderson, amongst others, who, you know, were really fighting to get, and Bruno Lawrence, they were fighting to get a percentage of local music.
Yeah.
So it was mandatory for them to play.
There was a long battle, that one, in this country.
In Australia, you know, that started about 1975, 73, 75. So they called that the radio wars in Australia. So they'd already done that, and it was well and truly entrenched over in Australia, but here it took a much longer time. But the whole touring pub thing, it really was influential in changing that politically.
Yeah, and so back here, you guys turned up here in Raglan.
Yep.
And as far as I understand, you went to see the Harbourview Hotel and proposed an idea to them.
Ah, it was funny. We arrived here about 1981 February, I think. And anyhow, around about somewhere in 1981, we were going into Hamilton, and we come over the top of the Divvy Ocean, and there's Sid in his old Citroen. Anyhow, he recognised my old Vanguard pickup truck that I had. So we stopped at the top, and he said, look, I've just, you know, flown back from Utah, from Salt Lake City, after living over there for a year. And we said, okay, let's start something. So we went down to the Harbourview Hotel and talked to the publican. Well, we found out first his name was John Humphreys. So we went out the back, and not only running the pub, but he also ran a taxi service here. Mm-hmm. And he had an old LTD, diplomatic service LTD, this big limousine that he used to use occasionally as a taxi. So anyhow, we go out the back where now the bottle store is, right out the back. And I said, oh, are you John Humphreys? He said, yeah, who are you? He was never one for niceties. But we introduced ourselves and said, oh, we're musicians. And he raised his eyebrows. Oh, yeah. Sort of in an inquiring sort of a way. And we said, look, we would like to play in your pub. Oh, yeah. When? And how much? So we said, look, which is your worst night? And he said, oh, Monday or Tuesday. We said, okay, we'll play on one of those two, and we'll build it up. And he said, well, how much you want for that? And we said, well, how about give us $60 and beers for us? So that was the original deal.
Right.
So that became the Mudshark Mondays. And the rate of pay never changed, but as we added members, of course, the amount of beer that was being drunk certainly did.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
So that that Mudshark Mondays, from memory, I think we started about 87, 88. It took a while because we were still touring with other acts. Sid had been touring with Midge. I'd been doing some work with Midge, and Sid and I had signed up a management contract to a country music organisation, Brendan Dugan and Gray Bartlett. So managed by them. As we signed up as a musical act. However, because both of us, you know, are musical directors, if you like, in our own right, they would farm us out on tours, left, right, and centre. And most of the time we were playing, being musical director for all these other country music tours up and down New Zealand. And then that sort of spread afar to Australia and also to the States. And so at any one time, whoever is here in New Zealand, we'd back whoever was in the country and whoever was doing some sort of a circuit. By that stage, of course, the clubs, the RSAs and the workmen's clubs, they'd got on the bandwagon as well, and they were now starting to use entertainment, and you'd either get a fee from them or we'd take the door. So all of a sudden, you know, we'd managed to transform the whole economy, musical economy. So it was viable for us, you know, to make a living from it.
Yeah, yeah. And so the Mudshark Mondays was a thing that happened from time to time? Or
that's correct.
Fits and starts a little bit?
No, it was never fits and starts. If we were in town, if Sid and I were in town, and we made a deal that Sid and I had to be there for it to be a Mudshark Monday. So, okay, irrespective of whoever else was there, and, you know, there could be up to, you know, 5-10 other musicians involved, or guests coming in, you know, doing a half dozen songs and then, you know, buggering off.
Yeah.
So, it depends on whether, A, we were in town or whether we were in the country, and whoever else was. And by the time Midge moved here, if his band was off the road and recuperating here in Raglan, then we drag them down. So the likes of, there's plenty of history about the Mudsharks, but that's how come it started to happen. However, there was also Clary Criswell.
Well, should we play? I brought up the Raglan by the Sea documentary because he's right at the start, so we might just play.
Let's play a little bit
of that.
I'll give you some background on that, yeah.
You of the lovely place I know, not very far away in this rendezvous, is a place where I'm longing to be. There's no place like Raglan by the sea. Enchantment and originality, where the sea is so blue, you can.
I've always been fascinated by small New Zealand towns, and in the course of my work over the years, I've been to quite a few.
So there we go. That's the start of Raglan by the Sea with Clary Criswell, who was quite a big noise in Raglan, but I don't know enough. He's just the first. That's the oldest recorded musician I've got.
Yeah, and the inimitable voice of Gary McCormick.
Yes.
So that Raglan by the Sea, in a brackets, introducing the legendary Mudsharks, which is the proper name of it, was actually filmed, directed, and produced by a company called Mirage Films. One being the director, Bruce Morrison, and the producer, Finola Dwyer. So when they came to town sort of through one of our other musical connections, that's Dave McCartney.
Yeah.
Dave McCartney out of Hello Sailor, the Flamingos, you name it. I mean, great. I mean, Rockstar Dave, we called him, because he was a real, genuine rock star.
Yep.
So, getting back to Clary.
Tell us more about Clary, because I don't know much about him.
So, when we first came to town and we proposed this idea to John, when we were in town, we would play down there on a Monday, Tuesday night, and depending on who was in town, they'd either join us or not. Sometimes, you know, it'd just be Sid and I, or Sid and I and Colleen Ralph, or Paul Kunak, who resided here. And, of course, Sid's son, Freddie, was just a twinkle in his eye at that stage.
That stage, yep.
However, on Wednesdays, they had the over-60s club in the front bar of the pub. The over-60s club, I mean, the first time Sid and I ever went in there, because we'd met Clary and he'd say, "Hey, you fellas want to come down for a lick?" Right? And we'd go, "What?" He said, "You know, come down and sit in, you know, we'd have a bit of a musical lick." Anyhow, so Sid can imitate Clary, bless him, far better than I can. But so we'd go down in there on a Wednesday, and Clary had all these musicians. He had this woman, Moana, on a T-chest bass. He had another sax clarinet player called Ross Donaldson. And Clary and Ross wrote that song we just heard just a minute ago.
Raglan by the Sea.
Raglan by the Sea. So that's one of the first original songs that I heard from some local musicians living here in Raglan.
Right. Okay. Is this the only recording we've got of that track?
No, Sid and I did actually record quite a bit of Clary. We actually did an album with him.
Does anybody know where it is?
No, I've got it. Right. So Sid has it as well. We've thought about doing something with it. We recorded it in Hamilton with one of our old drummers, Neil Reynolds, who had a recording studio at the time in Hamilton. And so we did some of these really old songs with Clary. You know, what you'd say is from the American songbook.
Okay, yep.
These are like Cole Porter, Hoagy Carmichael, all those old-time songs that were variously country music or jazz standards or the combination, what we call Western Swing, like Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, where you've got quite a quick quips, quite a fast tempo quick step. I won't give any examples, yeah. But so there was this blend that all of a sudden Sid and I, who had previously heard a lot of this music, we would sit in with Clary and playing a lot of this stuff. So we got really close with Clary, and Clary, no disrespect to the others, musically was the pick of the bunch of all the other musicians here. And so inevitably he would join in with us on the Mudsharks.
Okay.
That's how come that whole thing here started, and obviously the film. I think it was 87 that we filmed that. And you can actually see Clary in that footage.
87, yeah.
So you can actually see him sitting in with the band, and we do things like, "I'm the Sheikh of Araby."
That's the one. There's a recording of that from the 1990 telethon.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm singing that. It's not a fantastic, I think it's off someone's VHS tape or something, yeah. So it's not fantastic. But you were telling me the other day, I said we've reached 10 o'clock, but we're just going to keep going.
Yep.
You were telling me the other day that Clary was actually quite well known around New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
Days past.
Colleen Ralph, that's the mother of three of my children. Her mother, Marjorie, came from Huntley. She married one of the Ralphs there from, you know, the Ralph Minor and everything, that family. And she remembers Clary in the 1930s. As a huge musical star. And when Sid and I would go around and visit Clary, you know, or now and again he'd talk about some past gig he'd done or some past escapade or tour. And then slowly it began to dawn on us that he actually genuinely was a big star. I'll give you an example. He said to Sid and I that one particular gig was, he went over to Waiheke Island with his little orchestra, and that could be up to 10 piece, right?
Yeah.
And we've seen all the photos, we've seen the banners, you know, with Clary Creswell's orchestra, or he had different names for them. But so on one of these gigs, he said that this is in the 1930s.
Yeah.
He took £400 on the door in Waiheke Island for one of his dances that he ran.
That's, I don't even know how to translate that into modern money. That's obviously going to be a lot.
It's at least 4,000. At least 4,000. So you think of any of the, without naming any of them, I could give you a half a dozen artists now, really big artists, and that would be their normal fee for a night in New Zealand.
I would say it's more than that, actually, because we had so much inflation in the 80s.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot more than just 10 times as much.
But it gives you an idea of the pulling power that Clary actually had. So he was a touring musician. He played all over the place, but mainly in the North Island. He was born, I think, in Narawahia, but his parents had bought the old manse here up on...
Noriev, the corner of Noriev. Yeah.
So that was the old Presbyterian manse. I think that's correct. So Clary had also worked as a skipper on boats right up in the Hokianga Harbour, and as a fisherman, came down here, bought one of his boats down, and he would write these songs about some of these escapades, and they were great. You know, Raglan by the Sea is just one of them. But, you know, Sid and I felt this real affinity to him because he could easily, you know, join us on our country, rock, and blues stuff. Yeah. And we could easily join him on his old-time stuff.
Yeah.
And that was our background. Here's Clary here.
Yeah, yeah. This is off the Telethon 1990. And there you are. And we're just watching the video. No grey hair.
Still a beard.
Here's the voice.
I'm the Sheik of Araby. My love belongs to you.
So that's a style of music that I'm not...
Oh.
I don't associate with in any way, really.
That's
a different generation.
There's Neil Reynolds drumming. And Liam Ryan on keyboards. So yeah, there's this constant interplay of a range of musicians, and you know we're likely to appear in one guise or another, but the thing here is that we had learnt to be able to play different genres of music, and that became very important when we would certainly start to work with some overseas musicians.
Yeah.
And they'd say, you know, we'd play with them, we'd jam with them in a club or whatever, and they'd say, how come you guys can play all this sort of music? And we say, well, you know, in our country we had to do that. Because I grew up in the 50s.
Yeah.
And in the early 60s I joined an old-time dance band. And we would do this song. We'd do, you know, an old waltz like Tennessee Waltz, or we'd do a slow foxtrot. Here's a song. Let me play this for you. This is one of my own originals, and this is a nod back to that whole era that is still with me to the day, although I don't do a lot with it. This is just called Save the Last Foxtrot.
We're back.
Yeah, now on that recording there, we had John Dodd on bass, double bass, and John was a bass player who played regularly with us on tours with Midge as well. And I ended up playing in Auckland when I was based in Auckland in a band called Bamboo. And we did a lot of reggae, and we were playing reggae, you know, before Herbs even really took off. We also played in a Western swing band with what was the band that used to play with Ray Columbus and the Invaders.
Yep.
And so John and I had met these guys, and they took quite a shine to us. They were at least, you know, 10-plus years older. So we played this cowboy jazz, this Western swing music. So although this isn't Western swing... The players still keep on coming through. Yeah, so I guess Sid and I really are sort of part of that that generation, along with some of the guys who remain from the from that era of Ray Columbus and the Invaders, like Billy Christian, Max Merritt.
I know his name, yeah, Max Merritt.
John Hall, John Grinnell. I mean, John was playing country music, but he was still part of that older generation again.
But you're still working with him a bit, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because we had the song about the horses.
That's right.
Up north.
Our Porty Angel.
That's it, yes. Yeah, so we had that a little while ago come out, and we interviewed you about that. But so in that was your laptop doing that.
It was.
So aside from the Mudsharks and what Clary was doing, was there much other music happening in Raglan at that time?
Oh, look, it
we're talking the '80s, I guess.
Yeah, it. You know, as our own kids started to grow up, in particular on a musical perspective, Freddie.
Yeah.
Freddie did his first full time gig with Sid and I. We played for one of the Koenig kids.
Yeah.
For his 21st. Freddie was 7 at the time. His very first gig. And we caught on the drum, it was called Freddie and the Hot Potatoes on the big bass drum.
I think I've talked with Freddie about this. Yep. Yeah. It was here in the town hall, was it? That's my memory, and I wasn't even there, so we won't say that's
no, a fact. No. It was actually at the Koenig sort of compound, their ranch, their farm
house.
Up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Up in the an old wool shed. So Freddie was 7, and he did a 5-hour gig with us.
Wow.
So
it's a surprise his arms didn't fall off.
You know, so Freddie is 43, 44 now. I think he's 44, yeah. So that... You know, that Freddie had got involved at such a young age, you know, because of his dad and, you know, add me and you've got a band.
Yeah.
Add Clary and you've got, you know, some bona fide entertainment which can go from, you know, country through to old-time music and even modern stuff. So that, I guess that must have, it definitely inspired a lot of the other musicians. Some of the other musicians who were either like Sid and I, who had kids, and the kids were growing up musically, like Ross Henderson's.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Mater.
Right.
And you've got Rafe. You know, they're fine musicians. So, you know, Ross Henderson, he was one of our road and tour managers. So he had an old bus, and, you know, we'd... You know, it's like Woodstock all again, you know, or Blurter.
So we're now in this position where there's just this massive outpouring of music from this community.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just looking for where, I guess it just kind of built up over time. Like Freddie's had various bands as an adult, but then Cornerstone Roots came to town.
Yeah.
And I know Chris Thompson turned up here at some point in the 80s.
Yeah.
Fully formed act.
And Anna Connington.
Anna Connington grew up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and so...
It was bound to happen. I mean, I'll give you an example. In Auckland, that track I just played you, we had this band called Old Faithful, a Western Swing band. And I remember we played in the island of Reel, up just near the town hall in Auckland. Downstairs, rehearsing, was a schoolboy band... And actually, that was Dave Dobbin and the Dudes.
Right.
So I remember, and they would come up and, you know, watch us play. And Dave would have still been 16, 17 maybe. So that whole thing was developing literally under our stage while we were upstairs. And, you know, the torch gets passed, the old musical expression, the torch is passed, in sometimes mysterious ways, but it does. And if you even look at, you know, those real hit songs of Dave Dobbin, you will see, you know, it's real Kiwiana. It's not American country. It's not English folk. It's not American, you know, black blues. It's this sort of mixture of it. And add a lot of influence from Australia, and you've got those artists. So... You know, what was emerging here was a similar thing, and it's a real combination of different musical styles, you know, in an original in original ways.
Yeah, yeah, and it's now the community is just a very supportive of the music that's that's coming and has been for a while now.
And I must say, if it hadn't been for, you know, a lot of musicians who, you know, had, who were very political, including Gary McCormick, putting pressure on those in New Zealand broadcasting, we would never have had a mandatory local content of music.
I remember as a kid, it took so long to get that, and there was such a cringe. I remember Neil Finn saying that Crowded House didn't get played here until they entered the top 10. Well, they got to number 2 in the USA. It was finally at that point that the radio stations in this country relented and played But It Was Better Be Home Soon? No. That came off the next album. Yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter. Crowded House music.
You know, so the likes of people like Bruno Lawrence and Blurter. And Colleen and I spent some time doing some work with Blurter. And I even recorded an album with them. And, you know, they were all very, very pivotal, especially Bruno, because of his stature as an actor and a musician. You know, those guys are movers and shakers. You know, they would talk to these people and say, you know, if we want to grow our culture, we have to let the music be a part of it. And we have to let film, hence Roger Donaldson. Roger was part of that whole Blurter, Acme Sausage Company film thing. that's literally what one of the first film companies they came up with, the Acme Sausage Company.
It's interesting. Like as a kid, I was really aware of that. Or as a teenager, I guess I was really aware of that debate happening.
Yeah.
And the effort being made, and it was so slow moving. But now we look where we are now.
Yeah.
And we've got we had Lorde, who just was huge overseas, and we've got Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
Who's like one of the and he's not the only one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole Lord of the Rings scenario happening down here. Like, but it took such a long time to go from.
Correct.
And there's such a cultural cringe in this country about local stuff.
Funnily enough, I was listening to, it could have been Raglan Radio playing Sharon O'Neill's, the song from Smash Palace.
The only one of whose I know is Maxine, but I don't know if that was it.
That's it.
That's it, okay.
There's another one. Oh, what was it called? Can't remember. But, you know, so film via Roger Donaldson, the Murphy brothers, Bruno, and Sharon O'Neill in particular. Also, there were some other musicians, but they would get some original music and films, because when you do a film, to pay for the rights for a cover version of a song is prohibitive when you're talking nationally or internationally. So they started to use New Zealand music. So a lot of, you know, people, you know, Kiwis getting used. There it is. That's it.
It's the Smash Palace theme song from 1981.
You know, Bruno was the main actor. Sid and I ended up with Richie Pickett on one of the final parties for Heart of the Stag. Bruno was the main actor for that. And very, very similar. Kiwi music. Because it was cheaper to hire Kiwi musicians do a soundtrack and pay smaller royalties than to pay some big overseas, you know, person. So it sort of came about by default, really. It was a bit of radio because of the pub circuit. It was introduced into our main culture. Look at Foot Rod Flats. Da da ba ba.
Oh, that song. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dave and Herbs.
Yeah.
Dave Dobbin.
So we did bring some music. Well, should we play something before we wrap up?
Sure. What would you like to hear, do you think, Aaron? There's heaps of stuff here. We could have, you know, other.
It's got to be Raglan. Something to do with Raglan.
I know.
But it's the stuff you've produced, isn't it?
So, okay. Yeah, it is. How about
That's Dave's laptop again.
How about we do this one here, which is, have you been playing that one I wrote, Mudshark Monday?
I've actually been focused on the Call Me the Breeze, because that's the one that's going off on YouTube at the moment.
Okay.
So yeah, let's play Mudshark Monday to give a bit of.
And
well, actually, first of all, I'm going to jump into a bit of this. This is actually from the 1987 documentary.
Oh, good one.
and we'll just have a brief listen.
Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day. Oh, there's you right now.
Timing. And Peter.
Yeah.
The Mudsharks had two harmonica players, Midge and Peter Scandera.
Joining us for one tonight, back in the Mudsharks, it's Dave McCartney.
Dave McCartney.
So anyway, that's recorded by the TV crew.
Yeah.
So but you've got something else now. So we'll fade that one out.
Some time ago, two, three years ago, I had a dream about being in the States and playing in some of the juke joints. I toured over there in 2006 for about 3 weeks. And so we were playing in California. We were playing up and down on what's called the fair circuit. It's like our A&P shows.
Yeah.
Except bigger. Like we played one up in Paso Robles, which is sort of about halfway between L.A. and San Francisco. And Willie Nelson played the day beforehand, and it was like 120,000 people. And this is in 113 degrees heat.
Mm.
So we'd done that. We'd been doing some gigs there. We'd been over to Texas. We'd been based just out of Dallas. We played at the Stockyards, the old Fort Worth Stockyards. These are real, what do you call, shit-kicker bars.
Oh, yep.
There was bullet holes in the roof from these cowboys. It was built in the 1800s. These are classic places. Anyhow, we ended up in Nashville, too. We did a, what do you call an industry gig, where you play in a, you know, a great venue over there, and then you invite all the press to come along and either rip you apart or
right.
celebrate yeah. you, and you try and get a bit of traction. So one morning, this is only about 2-3 years ago, I woke up of actually having this dream where I was playing in this three-piece band in some roadhouse, I can't even remember what the state was, and I had the song, the whole song musically from beginning to end. So I woke up with it, and I thought, I've got to record this. This is a good one. So I went and did a rough demo of it, and I played it to Peter. And he said, hey, that's a great song. Why don't you write, rather than writing about some band in the States, write about the Mudsharks.
Right.
So I wrote the song about the Mudsharks, and Peter helped me in one verse and fitting some of the lyrics in the chorus. But I wrote the music. So hence the background to this song, and literally it's about the Mudsharks. So I mentioned Sid, and I mentioned Clary, and I also, Midge, Sid, and Clary.
Yeah.
All due respect to everybody else, Peter, myself, Liam, and all the other players. So this song, for me, sort of sums up that the roots that you grow up with, but the popular music that you end up performing on the road to earn a living. So it's this sort of combination.
All
right. And right at the end of the song, I segue it. I add an old instrumental. It's called Will the Circle Be Unbroken? And that's quite often used to musically to explain that whole circle. So irrespective of where we are in circle, we always there's always the nod there to other forms of music in the same musical circle.
So we might use this to go out of the interview on. So folks have been talking to Dave Maybe, and we're talking about the Mudsharks and Clary Creswell, who I didn't know much about, but was apparently a big noise in the 30s in this country, but based here in Raglan. And we're going to wrap up with Mudshark Mondays. How new is the song again? Like the last 12 months?
This is in the last 6 months.
Okay, and it's on YouTube.
Yeah, so we've got a video for it. Hey, yeah. Thank you very much, Aaron.
At any time. Thank
and
you.
See all Raglan listeners.
Mudshark Mondays were quite an occasion, a chance for all the locals to gather round. Come on down, sandals, shorts and gumboots, in the front bar listen to our sound. Monday night, the boys came down the mountain. Oh, Clary romanced the Sheik of Farabee. Why Sid sang about the Bow Street Boogie. Mitch would wail away through a burning rain. We paid our dues and the legend became a name. We were young men in our prime, playing the old songs, like the blue shirt waltz mamas and old flames. Route 66, Texas blues were classics. We paid our dues. The mud sharks became a name. Monday night, the boys came down the mountain. Oh, Clary romanced the Sheik of Farabee. While Sid sang about the Bow Street